the late 19th century sees the birth of a mass labor movement in American history. It's not that there hadn't been labor unions before that or strikes. That can be traced all the way back to the early 19th century. But there's a much wider presence of it. In fact, the 1877 general strike, which started in Martinsburg, West Virginia, on a railroad line, but the railroads were a significant flashpoint for labor discontent in the period. And then it spread all the way east to Maryland, to the Atlantic Ocean, and went all the way west through Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and St. Louis, Missouri, to San Francisco, California. And that was the first nationwide strike in American history, the summer of 1877. And a lot of people thought, because that's the same year that federal troops are withdrawn from the South, and then those same federal troops are redeployed by the President of the United States to break up the strike, that the United States had shifted from a sectional conflict based on North and South to a class conflict based on labor and capital. And there are great strikes and labor battles in the late 19th century that make it a really kind of a violent labor period and an exciting labor period in American history. Organizationally, labor was starting in the late 19th century to try to come up with a coherent organization, and there are two main labor federations. The first is the Knights of Labor, and it's a very late 19th century organization in the kind of culture that they brought to the way they thought about themselves. I mean, the idea of themselves as knights, as chivalric, as their project is honorable, and they were a fraternal organization, almost like a club, and the president of the union was not called the president. He was called the Grand Master Workman, Terence V. Powderly, who was an Irish-American worker. And the Knights of Labor had an outlook called producerism, meaning anybody who toils and works and is an honest worker can be part of our project. And this didn't just include people who worked for wages in a shop or something like that. It wasn't a modern union in that sense. It could include a small store owner who was friendly to the workers in the community, or, you know, so even a businessman, as long as they weren't seen as exploitative in the kind of wages and treatment that they meted out. So this producerism was sort of all of us against the railroad corporations and the titans of industry, and there was a kind of economic populism to it, but it wasn't on a strict line of class, if you will. It's a very unique philosophy by our lights, because they both were completely utopian. They wanted a cooperative commonwealth, which is almost socialistic, and yet very conservative in their tactics. And Terence V. Powderly, the Grand Master Workman, was very reluctant about strikes. He didn't think strikes were cooperative. He didn't think they were sort of sociable. And so he discouraged his membership from striking. And this contradiction between the radicalism of their social vision and the conservatism of their tactics ultimately leads to the unraveling of the Knights. In 1886, there's another strike wave. People pour into the Knights. They're looking to it to be militant and strike in their interests, and the leadership is pulling back, and they basically collapse in the course of that year, partly because of an outburst of anarchist radicalism in Chicago, where a bomb is thrown into the ranks of policemen at Haymarket, which they had nothing to do with, really, but it somehow they get this stigma.